This is Digital Story Podcast number 641, June 26, 2018. Today's theme is Overcooked. I'm Derek Story. A byproduct of today's amazing post-production software is sometimes images that are oversaturated, sharpened, and in general, overdone. You may think that the creators of these images would see their overzealous processing, but realizing it is trickier than you'd think. We're going to take a closer look at this phenomenon in today's TDS podcast. So I remember standing before a series of images printed by Ansel Adams. The photo was the famous moonrise over Hernandez, and there were like a dozen prints on the wall. And as I examined them from left to right, each image became darker and more intense. And I was going, you know, like, what's going on here? The image on the far left was an early print, and the one on the far right was one of the last prints. And it was really amazing just to stand back and watch how the artist kept pushing the envelope as he printed the same image over the years. My favorite version was one of the earlier prints. I thought that the image got way too dark in the latter years. So I was thinking about Adams recently when I was reviewing images by other very good photographers online. Nearly all of them had good captures. You could just tell by looking at it. They had framed the shot well, and the exposures were good, and all that kind of stuff. Some of them had complementary post-processing that enhanced that original image, but many of them had gone too far in the editing and had created striking but unnatural works. And I was wondering that if it's the same phenomenon that, you know, Adams experienced when he was printing Moonrise over Hernandez all those years, where you just keep pushing it, you just keep pushing it, you just keep working it. And my conclusion was, yes, I think it's the same thing, just with different tools. And this idea of overcooking, I think, I'm seeing it more now than ever. And I really do think that the evolution of Lightroom and the things that you can do there, applications like Luminar, Aurora HDR, On1, you know, all of these have really contributed to the ease of overcooking, shall we say. Because it's so easy to do. It's so easy just to push those sliders and open up the shadows all the way and bring down the highlights all the way and saturate and soften and not to mention sharpen and clarity and dehaze and all that kind of stuff. And it's very interesting. I think most of us are susceptible to this. And it happens slowly. It's like watching a kitten grow, right? Suddenly one day you come home and you got a cat. And you go, wow, how did that happen? You were just this cute little kitten, and now you're this, you know, well, still cute, but a cat, nonetheless. And when we get focused on our work, and we just are, this especially late at night, right? And really kind of working it, and go, that's good, but a little bit more would be better, a little bit more would be better. Because it happens incrementally, I don't think we really realize when we've gone over the line. So to help with that, right, to help reestablish the line, I have 5 suggestions for you. And I think these will really help when you're tackling, you know, this phenomenon that happens to us all when we're processing our images. And the first one is, I think you really need to determine the objective of the image. For instance, if it's travel photography and maybe you just want to tell a story, if it's street photography, maybe you want a little grit, maybe you want some black and white, maybe you want that sort of thing. If it's a portrait, probably want it to be flattering but not overdone. And if it's landscape photography, which I think is the area that we're most vulnerable to overcooking, then do you want a realistic landscape? Or do you want something that, you know, just really knocks everyone's socks off? And, you know, I think this is sort of a factor that I didn't mention at the top of the show. Online, I think, plays a role in all of this because you see people get all these likes for just these crazy saturated images. And then you go, well, you know, I'd like some of that too. And so then, you know, you push yours and then someone else sees that and you get likes and they push theirs. And we sort of create, you know, this escalation of cooking to our images. And I think that the likes or the quest for likes online definitely is a contributing factor to this. So the first point is that your objective, right? Do you just really want a bunch of likes on Instagram and you don't really care how unnatural the image looks? Well, then that's fine, right? Because then you have said, that is my stated objective. I'm going to do that and I'm going to collect those likes and then, you know, I'll do other stuff later on. However, if your challenge is to present a portrait that is flattering but more or less realistic, or a landscape that tells a story in more of a natural way, or any number of other photo subjects that we do, then I think you want to keep that in mind when you start editing. In other words, I don't think that when you're halfway through the editing process, that's the time to think about your objective. I think it's good to look at the image before you start working on it and go, what do I want to do with this? And, you know, what sort of message do I want to convey with it? If it's over the top, great. But if it's not, then, you know, you want to have that in your mind as you're working on it. The second one, study the works of photographers who you admire. And I think this is very helpful because a lot of times when we study photographers who we respect and we look at their body of work, we start to see this visual voice, you know, come through in their work. And a lot of times we'll see some sort of consistency that's part of that visual voice. And as you look at their images and you go, you know, he or she could have really gone over the top here, but they actually pulled it back a bit, or they brought down the saturation of those colors, or they, you know, went bold here, but it was part of, you know, a series on things that was a bold subject, you know, maybe something like down in Brazil, something like that. I mean, but, you know, you look at it and you look how they handled the processing of their images through the different types of shoots that they do. And I think this is helpful because as we look at people who are acknowledged great photographers and we look at how they struggle with these same things that we did, I'm not saying that we have to copy their work per se. What I am saying is that we can learn from their struggles and we can learn from when they do push the envelope and when they do show restraint and sort of look at how that worked for them and then think about how that could work for us. So letting them blaze the trail for us a bit, I think is a very helpful thing. And I always think that it's good to look at good work. Third point, and this may be the most important point in this whole list, which is stop editing and walk away. And we've joked about this before, right? But it's so important and it's worth bringing up every time we talk about something like this. This is something that I just think happens to all photographers. You know, we have this obsessive side to our personality. I think it just sort of comes with it. And when we start working on an image, especially late at night, let's say we start at 10 o'clock, you know, the house is finally quieted down. We have a chance to, you know, start focusing on our work. We've wanted to get to this image. We think we have a good shot there and we start working it. Oh, it's shaping up nicely. You know, we do a little bit more. We add some more color. We add some gradient mask. We start, you know, bringing up these tones. We're bringing down those tones. Then we sharpen and then we add clarity. Then we dehaze and we just keep going. And at some point, I feel like we need a little thing that goes off on our computer, a little red light that just goes beep, beep, beep. Step away. Step away from the mouse pad. Step away from the tablet. Go get a breath of fresh air, right? Have a glass of water. You know, walk around the house a little bit. You know, look at something else. Even watch TV for a minute. Something like that. Reset your eyes and then go back to the computer screen. And a lot of times when I go back to the computer screen, after I've walked away, I actually will go back through the history. You know, I like that history aspect that you have in Lightroom or Luminar, where you can go back in time on the edits in your image and just sort of look. And a lot of times it's funny, I can see where I start to go over the edge, right? I can see where the madness starts to set in. And, you know, of course, that's when I wish, you know, the red light would have gone off, right? Telling me to step away from the computer. But I have done this many times where I go back to that spot where I feel that I start to go over the line, look at it then, and then maybe just finish it off. So stepping away, resetting your eyes, taking a deep breath, having a glass of water, all those sort of things, I think, help you, come back to reality with your image and get out of that. It's almost like a trance that we fall into once we really get rolling with all those tools in our image editor. Show others your work. This is another thing. I talk about this a fair amount, but I think it's helpful to have another set of eyes. You know, someone that you trust, someone that you trust their aesthetic, vision, someone that seems to understand your work a little bit, and show them, different iterations of a shot that you're working on. Show them, what you started with. Show them, where you are right now, and then maybe show them one or two versions that are in the middle. I have people, when I'm reviewing work online, and I do this every day, I look at tons of photos, where they show a before and after, and I'm looking at this, and I don't even know what to say, because sometimes I like the before, the shot right out of the camera, much better than the after they had been working on it for half an hour. Because I just think they went too far, and that the natural shot caught by the camera was actually a better image overall. Other people that you trust, can help you with this. They can go, all right, so I'm looking at the shot, and I'm thinking to myself, wow, those red rocks are really red. Is there a reason why you're doing that? Is there something, that's important to the shot that, those things are so saturated? Or why is that sky so blue? That is unnatural. I live here. I never see the sky that blue. How does it look when you back it off a little bit? Those kinds of things, just to help you go, oh, okay, that's right. The sky never is blue here. So then you can make the decision, well, am I portraying something that I just like the way it looks, the way it is, or am I really trying to portray something that's a bit more natural? That conversation that you have with a trusted person can help you with that. And I think those are important. Now, I will admit, it is hard to find that person. So on the list, this may be the most difficult to do, but if you can, it's worth doing. And maybe it's someone online, right? Maybe it's someone that you meet in a photo group or something, that you guys just sort of, strike a friendship, and you go, hey, can I show you some shots? And they go, yeah, do you mind looking at some of mine? And, go about it that way. That's not a terrible idea. Just obviously the usual cautions that come with online friendships, right? All right. And then the fifth one, and this is also hard. But you have to learn your visual weaknesses. And we all have visual weaknesses. We all have, these blind spots. One that I see a lot, a very common one, is over-sharpening, where people just, and they do combinations of different sharpening techniques. So they use a sharpening filter. And then they'll add, some clarity. And then they'll add dehaze. And, all these things that are affecting the sharpness of the photo. And it's sort of like they just keep going. They don't stop. And then you see the finished product, the product that they post online, and you're looking at it and you're just going, that is just like way too edgy. There, sometimes there's even halos and stuff around, around the, the points where they've been sharpening. And you go, how could you not see those halos? Or it's a visual blind spot for them. And I think that this is where other people can help us with this. This is where feedback can help us, find our visual weaknesses. We can do it by ourselves too, right? We can have an image and step away from it, look at some other stuff, and then go back to our image and then go, mine looks a lot more than what I was looking at before. And then maybe work on it that way. It's tough. And I would say that, the common visual weaknesses that I see are over-sharpening. That's definitely at the top of the list. Oversaturation up there too. Opening up highlights and shadows too much. And this is something that raw photography has given us, the ability to really open up shadows and to really bring down our highlights. And it's very helpful. I mean, it's one of the things that I love most about digital photography. But what happens is the world a lot of times is a contrasty place. You know, it does have dark darks and it does have bright brights. And sometimes when we take those and we move them all to the middle, right, and just have all that shadow detail and all that highlight detail and everything, the image just starts to look, in all honesty, a little bland and unnatural. And it's okay to have a black sometimes, and it's okay to have a white. That is a visual weakness that I am seeing more and more of, people that just feel the need to open up the shadows and compress those highlights a lot. I think another visual weakness happens with a lack of cropping, believe it or not. They shoot the shot, and then they start working on the shot as is, and they don't try to find the art within the shot, and they forget to crop. And then you show them a crop, and this is funny. I go through this online. This is funny, where I will say, I love your shot, but I really think you need to take out that bottom 25% there. I think it's just, you know, killing the impact of the shot. And a lot of times all I'm doing is just taking a card or something on the computer screen itself and just kind of, you know, moving it up there, or moving it to the side, or moving it down. I'm just looking at the image, you know, doing that, just taking a 3x5 card or whatever and just playing with the image on my computer screen. And by doing this, I just a lot of times find a shot that is a much more powerful shot than what's posted on the screen as is. Cropping is another visual weakness that we just have to be aware of. So find what yours is. Find the things that you just don't see or, you know, visually overlook. And then make it a point, even if it's putting post-it notes on your computer to remind you to crop, to remind you not to open up the shadows so much, or not to oversaturate or oversharpen, whatever it happens to be, so that you constantly work on that to the point to where it's no longer a weakness. I realize it's hard to show restraint sometimes. We're all there. But hoping that these guidelines sort of help you kind of move along a path that, among other things, helps you refine your visual voice, helps you present work that maybe won't get you 1,000 likes on Instagram because it isn't this wildly saturated sunset, but is something that other quality photographers and people who admire good photography will really appreciate. And if that's your goal, you know, put some of this into practice and see what happens. And I'm always, you know, open to hearing from you, especially if you have an epiphany while you're working on this. You know, share that with me. You know, use the contact form on the Nimble Photographer. Send me email. I love hearing this stuff. Remember, every time you learn something and you share it with me, I learn something too. And this happens in the workshops as well. Have fun with this and, you know, good luck battling this phenomenon that affects everyone, even Ansel Adams. The Portfolio Project, week 8. The directory is live. Yeah, boy. Oh, you know, and this is fun. This is really fun. So I have published the directory of TDS members of our virtual camera club who have a Portfolio Box Pro account and have put together, you know, at least one or more portfolio pages using the software. And this is really neat. I mean, it's been fun looking at individual sites each week. I've really enjoyed that. But the thing that I noticed this week after I assembled the directory and then I went through all the links to make sure that they were working properly is that it's so interesting to see how this is just like everything else in photography. You know, these folks have the same software, you know, Portfolio Box. They're out taking pictures, and yet every site looks very different. Every site looks very different. And I just think that it's good in terms of inspiration, but also just in terms of possibilities. You know, you can look at a site and go, I really like what he or she did there. Not so crazy about this. So, you know, then that goes on your list for your portfolio site. You know, keep this, don't do that. Keep this, don't do that. And I guess this is part of the theme of what we're talking about in general today, of looking at what others do, deciding what we like, and deciding, you know, what doesn't strike us quite so well, And then, you know, taking the best of all of that and then incorporating it to our own work. And I think that's what this directory does. Now, I'm going to be adding to the directory weekly. So I won't be talking about Portfolio Box as much in the future. I mean, I never know for sure. Right? You know, they may decide to come for another sponsorship round, and then I'll go, hey, I've got lots to talk about. You know, and I'm going to have the link to the directory in the show notes. And you may have been working on something, you know, during the sponsorship, and it just wasn't ready yet to send me an email about. And of course, you use the contact form on the digital story. But maybe next week or the week after that, it will be. Send it to me. Send it to, even if I'm not talking about Portfolio Box on the show, send me the link because I will add it to the directory. And I'll do directory reminders occasionally on the show too, because I want this area to be there for us to study and think about, because I think putting together your own portfolio page or pages is another step in that process of, you know, really becoming, you know, the kind of photographer that you want to become. So we have it there. I will always have the link to the directory in the show notes every week. It'll be there. It'll be kind of, I'll put it as part of our standard boilerplate. And then I'm also going to add it to the member participation area on the nav bar on the digital story. So it'll be there also. And then you can always just search on portfolio directory using the search box on the digital story, and it'll come up too. So the actual page is called Directory of Portfolios by TDS Photographers. Take a look at it. And, you know, this is just part of that whole thing of just looking at other people's work. I think our members have done some really nice stuff here. I enjoy looking at it, and I think you will too. I'm going to leave the tile up for Portfolio Box for a while. If you want to do this, start with a tile. Click on the page first. Even if you're just going to do the free site to start there. Because by doing that, then you'll be eligible for the discount if you decide to go pro. So make sure that you start with either the link in the show notes or the tile. And if you do decide to go for the pro version, $82 before our 20% discount, that's for a full year. And that includes your domain name, your custom domain name. And you get a page up. Send it to me. Use the contact form on the Nimble Photographer. Of course, that link is in there too, in the show notes. And I'll add it to the directory. And I'm not going to add to the directory every day. I was going to batch it like once a week or something like that. The Portfolio Box experience for me has been really good. A lot of notes that I've gotten from people who are using either the free version or the pro version are coming from other platforms and saying that this one for photography is just more intuitive. It looks better when I'm done working on it. It's just easier to use, all that kind of stuff. And I think that's very true. I think with Portfolio Box, to get a site that looks really nice, really shows off your image as well, is easier and more professional looking than any of the other tools that I've used. I'm really happy to be working with these guys, and I'm really happy they came into my professional life here so that I could have my Portfolio Box site too. So all the information about Portfolio Box is there in the show notes, including the link that takes you over to our landing page. If you think that it's time for you to have a showcase page or pages, this is the way I recommend doing it. You can start with the free site. It's really fun. It's a very satisfying experience. Big thanks to Portfolio Box for their sponsorship. It's been a true pleasure. Hands-on with the Rugged Electronic Dry Cabinet. This is fun. I did a review of this. I posted a review on the digital story about the 80-liter Rugged Electronic Dry Cabinet. And this was something that I've been thinking about for a while. I mean, I have a very secure lockup for my gear, but it's also kind of a pain in the rear to get to. And I just found myself spending too much time, you know, digging in, getting into it and getting when I just needed a lens or something. So what I did was I added the Rugged Dry Cabinet to my storage area, and it sits on top. It looks really nice, first of all. I mean, really nice design, kind of a tinted glass, interior LED lighting that you can turn on and off, you know, all that kind of stuff. The 80 liter model, the one that I'm using, has a shelf, so it's padded, so that gives you, you know, two areas to put your stuff. and then it has a key lock. So it's not as secure as a safe. However, in terms of just, you know, people casually getting into your gear when you're not looking or something, it definitely is a nice deterrent for that. What I've done is the stuff that I'm using a lot, when I'm shooting with it is great. When I'm not shooting with it, then I just put it in the dry cabinet and use the key lock, and I can get to it fast. It looks good, and it's on display because, you know, the smoky glass with the camera gear inside, it looks really good. And the bonus is, of course, that the dry cabinet has humidity control. So you can control the humidity. You can keep it at anywhere from 30% to 60%. And they even include a list of, you know, depending on the type of thing that you're putting in there, you know, what your humidity setting should be. For photo gear, 40% is a great setting. So you put it in there. And, you know, so then your gear is also stored at a nice relative humidity that's good for photography gear. And that's a bonus, too. Now, the way that that works is, of course, when you open up the cabinet, the humidity could change. And it has an LED readout right on the top of the cabinet. Now, if you leave it open for a long time, then the humidity in the cabinet will be the same as the room. That's only logical, right? If you just open it up, put a lens in, grab something, and close it, then it might change a few percentage points, but then it comes back fairly quickly. If it has to go all the way back to 40% or 35%, depending on what you have it set on, once it's been open for a while, then, you know, that will take a couple hours. Even if it takes a couple hours, though, then, you know, the other 22 hours in the day, it's at a nice humidity setting. And I found that most of the time, I'm just opening it up, grabbing something, and put it back in there. So the humidity is staying pretty nice. And of course, as we all know, when you have a good relative humidity for storing your gear, then you're battling fungus, you know, for the lenses. You're not going to get corrosion. You know, all that kind of stuff just isn't going to happen to your optics. So, and that's all the stuff that's very hard to fix. Believe me, I am in the camera repair business with a film camera shop, and I can tell you that that stuff can be a challenge. So at any rate, if you're interested in this sort of thing, it's $249 at B&H with free shipping. I have the link both to the review and to the actual cabinet itself in the show notes. Now, of course, it'd be hard for me to go back to just having either cameras all the way in the safe or just, you know, sitting out on tabletops. This is a nice in-between solution that protects your gear. So I have something fun coming up on July 21st, but it's here in Santa Rosa. And it's going to be a half-day workshop. I don't do these very often. And this is going to be a Luminar deep dive workshop. It's going to be from 8:30 in the morning to 12:30 p.m. here in Santa Rosa. So this is a physical workshop. This isn't our online workshop that we're going to do, the Nimble Classroom that we're going to do once the Digital Asset Manager comes out. The two big differences between what I'm doing on the 21st and our online shop is that, first of all, you get a video of everything on the online thing so that you have those reference videos long after the workshop's over. And the second thing is you don't have to travel for the Nimble Classroom. You know, you just fire up your computer and we're there. So, and like I said, that's going to happen once the Digital Asset Manager for Luminar is announced. However, this workshop is really helping people prepare for the Digital Asset Manager and use the tools that exist right now in Luminar. It's already halfway full, and I haven't even talked about it yet. We just announced that we're going to take a maximum of 25 for this because we've got a nice room and it can hold more than 25, but I was just there today and 25 would be perfect and nice and comfortable. So we'll limit it to 25. There's going to be two of us speaking. You know, anyone that's on the Skylum public group that has seen Angela jump in and help, she's, you know, one of the moderators for Skylum. She's really good with the technical stuff, and she's going to be in town that week. So I said, Angela, we have to do this workshop together, and she was all over it. So Angela and I are going to be teaching this workshop in Santa Rosa. If you're interested in it, it's $69, only 25 people. And I have the link in the show notes that will take you to our workshops page where you can just register right there. And basically, we're going to divide it up into three segments. So we're going to do Luminar Basics, how to accomplish everyday tasks. And then the second section is going to be traditional techniques in Luminar. So stuff that we've done in other applications like working with layers, graduated screens, blending modes, and all that. I'm going to show you how to do those in Luminar. And then session three is going to be the new age of image editing, how Luminar's new tools will change your photography. So then we really get into the new stuff in the third session. Having Angela there is just going to be awesome. She and I complement each other very well. So it's going to be fun. So if you're going to be in the Northern California area on July 21st, then go to the link that I have in the show notes. It's just our workshops page. Sign up before it fills up. This one will sell out. And come join us and hang out. And then those of you that have signed up for the Nimble Classroom on the Digital Asset Manager, you will hear from me directly once that Digital Asset Manager is ready to go. And then we will do our online thing as well. Anyway, going to be a lot of fun on July 21st, and I'm so glad that Angela's coming out to join us. All right, just a couple things before I wrap up here. First of all, big thanks to our Inner Circle members, our Patreon members who support this site, who support this podcast. We've got some new ones lately. Welcome aboard. Welcome to the Inner Circle. I hope you're enjoying the benefits, and I hope you're enjoying that wonderful feeling that comes from supporting this show and helping me keep the lights on here. It feels really good, and it's super helpful. And also a big thanks to our friends at Red River Paper. I've had so many things to review lately. I haven't got to the Canon printer yet, but guess what? It's next on the list. So I'm going to be firing that up hopefully this week and start printing on Red River Paper. They've got a new Surface that I'm going to write them about. And I just saw them mention it in a newsletter. As I recall, it was like a polar metallic or something like that. And I'm going, what is that? And it's like combination of, the polar, Arctic polar and the metallic surface. And I'm going, whatever that is, I need to get my hands on it. So I'm going to contact Drew this week, find out what's going on there, get my hands on it, and then I'll include that as part of the testing, this new surface that they have. But, obviously, that's the thing about these guys, is that you really have to keep an eye on them. They're always coming up with new stuff, giving us, new looks for our prints. They have a tile on all the pages of the Digital Story, and they have a rocking Facebook page at facebook.com/Red River Paper. Longest running sponsor of the Digital Story, and just really great people too. That's going to do it for me this week. It was interesting thinking about this week's topic. I hope you enjoyed it. I have some very cool stuff in the queue for upcoming shows. Come back and join me next Tuesday. I'll be here for you. Hopefully you'll be here as well. In the meantime, have a great week. See you next week. Bye-bye now.